This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday. Thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, Managing Editor of Texas Scorecard. We're going to be taking a look at some of the big stories coming out of this week, actually even looking ahead into the coming weeks. If you can see behind me on the screen here, we've got the Texas House, which is right now starting to gavel in behind me for their last day of the first called special session. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in depth. But first, I've got Jeremy Kitchen here, Capitol correspondent. You know, it's not just news about special session. We'll talk about that. But first, I want to talk about something we're seeing across the state. Now, over the last week, we've seen some county and city officials in Williamson County, for example, and the city of Houston that have been implementing kind of their own local mask mandates, despite the fact that Governor Greg Abbott has issued executive orders saying that that's not supposed to happen.
That's right. It's unclear as to if there's going to be anything said. To my knowledge, Abbott has not responded to this happening thus far. But, you know, it is kind of a shot across the bow for some of these local officials who support this sort of thing. Obviously, kind of spitting in the face of Governor Abbott's executive order that attempted to prohibit these things, for sure.
I mean, like I said, you've got Williamson County, who the district court's office is saying, if you're coming into our office, you need to wear a mask. They say that they can do it because they are a, quote, separate branch of government. Right. Sort of an interesting mix in this whole tie of kind of the problem with these executive orders conflicting with each other and you know, when things are done outside the normal process. Houston city employees, they have to do it on city property. You even have, I mean, not really surprisingly, but you have the mayor of Austin, Steve Adler, asking the city manager to require all city employees to be vaccinated and urging businesses to do the same, even though, again, Governor Greg Abbott has put out there in recent executive orders to say that government agencies, not businesses, but government agencies like cities can't require vaccines.
It's interesting. I mean, certainly taking advantage of kind of the current media narrative, if you will, nationally, you know, with the quote unquote Delta variant, right, and cases on the rise and what have you, of course, kind of reverting back to the masks work sort of thing to curtail this, even though I think, as we've seen over especially the last year, it doesn't seem to have been the reason for that at all. So
amazing. I mean, Adler actually said, right, and Mayor of Austin said that if he could, he'd force all citizens in the city to wear masks again, even including vaccinated individuals, right? Sure. And that's supposed to be, of course, the golden, you know, key, you get the vaccine, right, you're supposed to be fine. Well, he's asking them, he wants them to wear masks again as well. You even saw up in North Texas a situation in Dallas County where actually a county commissioner, J.J. Koch, was thrown out of the county commission, the county commissioner's court for refusing to wear a mask.
That's right. My understanding is, and we have the story up, of course, on the website, but my understanding is that he pushed back, right, to County Judge Clay Jenkins, and it ended up resolving to where he left and was told that he would have to tune in virtually because he refused to wear a mask. I mean, it's very interesting. Very interesting.
Again, a lot of setups, but also the legislature had the opportunity to address this during the regular legislative session to prohibit these mask mandates, mm-hmm, to do so in a way that would actually be stronger than, you know, just orders from the governor, and they refused to do so.
That's right. They chose not to. They had a few different opportunities. They had bills specific to that. They had amendments on bills specific to that, and they ultimately chose not to.
All right. Well, if you can kind of see behind me, I don't know how well it shows up on the screen, but right now the Texas House has adjourned sine die for the first legislative special session. Folks that have been following this, it started on July 8th, mm-hmm, and really not a lot has happened since they started. Actually, before we talk about what all was done and what was really actually left undone and what's to come in the future, I want to take a little look back. Let's take a little look back at some of the highlights of the last 30-day special session.
I will remember.
Everything is a moving puzzle, and we will adjust as we can. And we do have plans. And, you know, it's not something we are at liberty to tell you today.
Don't let your So you're being used by national Democrats to try to pass H.R. 1 to federalize elections, which you as a Harvard grad should know better, because the Constitution puts that in the hands of state legislators who are supposed to be in their state, and you happen to be in Washington, D.C.
Today's permission slips are Caprock Caliche.
We will overcome. We will overcome. We will overcome someday. Deep in our hearts, I do believe we will overcome someday.
Thank you, Miss T.
We will overcome. It's going to be stuck in my head, honestly, right. Just watching that. It is so cringy. But look, you had the Democrats leaving just a few days into the special session. What all happened?
The answer is nothing, if we're being honest. But as far as, like, legislatively. But ultimately, it was 30 days of political theater. Right, I think is probably the best assessment. Mind you that, yes, they left, I think it was 5 days into the start of the special session, but it is something that some of those Democrat lawmakers signaled was going to happen a few weeks before in mid-June. Like they said that this was still an option on the table, and they were still unable to do so.
And Republicans essentially allowed them to walk up and leave the state, actually, in some cases, actually allowed to come back and forth. Between D.C. and Austin, not being arrested, even though you had Governor Greg Abbott saying that they would be if they ever tried to come back to the state. Some, even Tiffany watching right now, says it's the speaker's fault, talking about Speaker Dade Phelan. But, you know, this wasn't really, I don't think, a big success for Democrats either.
Sure.
And you take a look back, I mean, what are some of those? It just seemed like it was misstep after misstep for Democrats.
Yeah, they're definitely like, you know, I think the thing that kind of lit social media on fire was the revelation that there was Miller Lite right on the
bus.
That
was day one,
right?
Yeah,
that was the
first
day.
So they're smiling, they're not wearing masks, even though Democrats would lead us to believe that's the most important thing you're supposed to do. They've got a case of beer. They're grinning ear to ear, and it looks like they're going on a vacation.
That's right. I mean, you saw pictures of lawmakers bringing like large 40-ounce containers of presumably alcohol in brown paper bags, right? Loading, looking like they're going on vacation, you know, the heroes welcome sort of thing, loading the planes. I don't think that necessarily boded well for what they were trying to communicate. You know, obviously a series of just terrible interviews by people that weren't prepped for the national limelight.
Representative Michelle Beckley, right? People might know she's the one with the blue hair. She was in the clip before. Right. She actually does a terrible interview and then decides a week or two into being in D.C. that she wants to stay. And so now she's running for Congress of her hotel room.
That's right. Her campaign launch video was literally seemingly shot in her hotel room.
Meanwhile, though, I mean, I think the big takeaway from it is that it was certainly a fundraising event.
Absolutely. So to be clear, during the regular session, there is a moratorium on lawmakers fundraising. They cannot fundraise for their campaigns. During a special session, there's nothing that stops them from doing that. And so, to be fair, both parties have fundraised off of these shenanigans.
Sure. I mean, you see it from Republicans as well, saying chip in $10 so we can stop the Democrats next time, right? Meanwhile, Democrats are receiving, money, hundreds of thousands of dollars from Beto O'Rourke, from national groups, from fundraising. So, you know, from that perspective, I suppose Democrats, you know, were somewhat successful. But gosh, it was just one moment after another. You had the Dallas Democrat Party soliciting care packages, saying that they needed to send those lawmakers soda and candy, like they were hidden away at a camp or something, or they were like, you know, on tour in the Middle East. I don't know. It was absolutely, absolutely bizarre.
It was almost as if they had a plan, it fell apart very quickly, right? It seemed like outside of getting the planes organized, the buses to get to the planes, the flights to get there, that there wasn't so much of a plan after they got off the plane.
And of course, you know, who could forget their super spreading COVID as well, right?
I'm sure that is not something they planned for. And of course, that just consumed media headlines, right?
Philip watching right now says, absence does not make us fonder, fire them. Okay, I think that's a sentiment that's shared by a lot of people who have been watching this. So
sure.
All that to say, the session has ended. The 30 days are up. And the next, kind of the double overtime, the second special session, is slated to start tomorrow. What's different this time?
There are a few additional things. You know, Abbott did follow through with something he said quite a few times, right, both in the last 30 days and before, is that he will call special session after special session until his agenda is considered. And so he announced his agenda for this second special session starting tomorrow, yesterday, and it's the same stuff as the first special session agenda, with some additions, some of those being, you know, the how to allocate federal funding, for instance, right, for the COVID relief.
There's billions of dollars in federal funds that are coming in.
There's something specific to, because the fall semester of public school is about to start, right? And that's, of course, in media headlines right now. He added in there, you know, the legislature kind of giving guidance on how schools react to pandemics. You know, this is something, of course, preventing mask mandates in schools was something that was in a executive order, you know, a few months ago, correcting that sort of thing. And he's asking the legislature to approach that, among a few other things related to public schools, for instance, right?
Right. And you've got kind of a radioactive waste thing that's added in there, which is an interesting addition, kind of a pet project. Certainly something, I guess, important to people who live near that.
Right. That's right.
But that was an item that wasn't on there before.
Correct.
As well as legislation to prevent cities, it's kind of called, you know, to prevent cities from implementing their own paid sick leave ordinances, but really it's kind of more broadly as cities can't implement more strict employment regulations than the state does.
That's correct, yeah. And that kind of correlates with some of the other things we've seen over the last few years, whether it's the Uber bill or whatever, right? Is like, I think it's the prevention of kind of this patchwork of regulation all across the state, is you can't supersede state law on this sort of thing. And so
the most interesting addition I saw in that list that the governor put out yesterday was the legislative quorum requirement change.
Right. What's somewhat interesting about this, I think it was a few weeks ago, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, right, like submit a letter basically saying, like, I don't know why we have two-thirds as the quorum. It should just be a majority.
Yeah, so right now it requires two-thirds of members. Mm-hmm. That's why when Democrats left, they got that number below the 100 out of 150 members of the House, and that's how they were able to freeze this session.
Sure. Yeah, and so you saw Dan Patrick ask for that. Of course, the governor has put that on there. What's interesting about that, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, is like, in order to pass any of these, but let alone a quorum requirement change, you need the absent lawmakers there to make quorum.
So that's the question, right? So you've got these new topics. Interestingly, so the question is now, like, okay, how do you compel Democrats to return, right? So far, it seems like they haven't been willing to go arrest them, right?
Correct.
So the question is, you know, would they put something on the call that would maybe attract them back? And really, you look at these items, and none of them, to my view, really do that.
Right. I mean, if anything, they kept all of the stuff that was originally on there. I think it should be noted, too, right, is like, we don't know, you know, yes, the governor's proclamation has specific language to say, I want election integrity, right?
Yeah.
That does not necessarily prescribe what that specifically means in legislative form, right? So a bill, if a bill, let's say lawmakers come back, they have a quorum, and a bill is introduced in this next legislative session, it might be different than the bill that was introduced in the first special session, right?
Right. There's no guarantee that it's going to be the same legislation.
Right.
So you have the Senate saying, Dan Patrick going out there, the Senate, of course, passed all these items.
Right.
Pretty early on, and they've been just waiting for the Texas House to do its work. Now they're going to have to pass those bills yet again. But Dan Patrick has indicated that they're going to be having committee hearings as soon as this weekend getting bills to the floor next week.
Yeah, I mean, he has made no bones about, like, he's talked about this in the first special session and followed through with it, is that, like, the Senate's here to work, and you obviously saw that. They maintained quorum, of course, during the first special session, and so they were able to very quickly, I think it was within the first 2.5 weeks, they were pretty much done with all the items on the governor's special session agenda, whereas the House couldn't do any of that.
Right. Meanwhile, what are we hearing out of Speaker Dade Phelan's office about what his plans are for the House?
Before coming on the air here, I have not seen anything from Speaker Phelan's office. I mean, we had talked earlier, we had seen his communications director give like a quote to another media outlet, right, kind of talking about it. But mum's the word. I mean, we don't know. In fact, I know the Dems just had a press conference. The absent Democrats just had a press conference up there in D.C. It seems like at least they're trying to convey that, hey, we're still here fighting the quote-unquote good fight. You know, it's unclear.
I mean, well, sure. But at the same time, I think you saw yesterday the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, kind of essentially saying, you know, well, if they're required to be back in Texas, we would support that.
Sure,
it's almost home. Like the house guests that have overstayed their welcome.
Which is another, we were talking about earlier, kind of another gaffe in this, like, overall saga, right? It's like, I think they had the intent to go there thinking they were going to influence Congress, influence national leaders to do something, and it seems like they weren't.
And they never got a meeting with President Joe Biden.
That's right.
I mean, the closest they got was a meeting with Vice President Kamala Harris,
right,
where they almost gave her COVID, I guess, because it was kind of a spreading event. But that was within the first couple of days, and really it just, it all sort of petered out. So I think the last thing that is important to note when talking about Speaker Phelan's response to all this is that while Dan Patrick is saying, we will have a quorum in the Senate, we will get the business done, we've done it before, we'll do it again, Speaker Phelan has kind of a track record of, you know, we don't know what happens behind closed doors, but evidence would suggest that he has a track record of certainly enabling, if not encouraging, some of these walkouts, as even going back to when Democrats walked out in May.
Right. That's right. Almost a week after the regular session concluded, there's a revelation and Speaker Phelan confirmed that when he met with the Democrat caucus before the consideration of the election integrity bill, he told them, he's like, I will not arrest you. Which is all they needed, right?
We'll not arrest you. If you want to leave, you can go. Well, guess what? They left, right? You know, oh, surprise.
And what, you know, as I said earlier, they, some of these same Democrat lawmakers communicated mid-June that this was still an option on the table. You had people like State Representative Tony Tinderholt, the first day of the special session, offer an attempted House resolution, right, to change the rules, to punish some lawmakers that may walk out. And that wasn't really given any consideration. 5 days later, they walked out again.
Mm-hmm. And you had the Texas Freedom Coalition announce yesterday that they had Texas Freedom Coalition, a citizens group that files open records requests. They released a text message from Joe Moody, a Democrat state representative who previously served as the Speaker pro tem, sort of Dade Phelan's number two person in the House, just a couple days into the session, where they texted about wanting to meet to kind of figure out how Democrats were going to navigate the session. We don't know what happened in that meeting,
right.
But, you know, again, they left a couple days later.
Right. And seemingly with no ramifications. We went the entire 30 days with no punishments, right? No penalties given out to lawmakers that are absent. I mean,
so what do we, I guess the last question is, session starting tomorrow, they're going to gavel in at noon. What should we be watching for in these next days, and what's going to be different?
Is, will the House have a quorum?
Okay.
I think there's a few questions, but I think first and most importantly is, will they have a quorum when they start? And if they don't, when they start, will they have a quorum within the next week, right? Or are we just repeating what is we doing? Let's say they don't have a quorum. I think the follow-on questions is, will Republican leadership act to do anything to compel them to come back? Because so far they've been reluctant to do so.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be following that closely. Thank you so much for talking about all that. I know it's a lot to go through, looking back, looking forward, but it's certainly a topic that we're going to be following here closely. One other question, by the way, that we actually have here in the comments from Paula, she actually asked if the governor can shut down the border. This is a question that's been coming up a lot as the border and border crisis has continued to surge. And so far, we've seen a lot of talk from Governor Greg Abbott. We haven't seen as much action.
You've seen his primary candidates or challengers say that they can. You've got at least one of them that's out on the campaign trail indicating that they can. But to your point, you have not seen Governor Abbott say as much or indicate as much. He is attempting, right, to convey that he's doing as much as he can executively to send resources and stuff there. Also to that point, it was added to the first special session call, the funding, right, for some of the new border security initiatives. Obviously, that was not considered. It remains on the call for this special session. So.
All right. I want to say a shout out to a lot of folks watching. Tiffany from Deer Park, Joanna from Rockwall, Deborah tuning in from Rosenberg, Sharon watching from Fort Worth. I want to let everybody who's watching here know that, you know, you need to mark your calendars December 4th. Okay, December 4th, we've got the Conservative Leader Awards, which take place in Irving, Texas. We've got early bird pricing for that event. It's kind of you don't want to miss it. If you're a grassroots activist, It's the opportunity to meet folks from across the state. But we've got early bird pricing for that. And actually, more importantly, nominations, right? If you know somebody who deserves, recognition as a conservative leader in the state of Texas, please let us know. We've got nominations open. You can check out that link if you're watching it right here on Facebook, or you can go to texasscorecard.com to find out all about that, as well as to look at some of our other podcasts and other shows. We've got the Luke Macias Show up there daily. We've got This Week in Texas with Jeremy up there weekly, new episodes on Monday, as well as that Texas Directory, all right? A second special session means it's still time, right? It's still time to be contacting your lawmakers. Go to our Texas Directory up there at texasscorecard.com to find out how you can communicate with your state representatives, your state senators, heck, even your congressmen, statewide elected officials. So again, thank you so much for joining us. We're gonna be back here next week, next Friday, to take a look at what happens or doesn't happen during the first week of the second special session. But for right now, thank you so much for joining. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.